for the formally introduce you, but I'm not going to introduce myself again. Hello, Bishop Blair. Thank you for joining us. Okay, great. Okay, great. I think we'll go ahead and we'll get started with the last press conference for the 2017 Fall General Assembly. I'm Judy Keene, Director of Public Affairs for the USCCB, and Bishop Coyne from Burlington, Vermont, will introduce our panelists.
Thank you, Judy. Here to speak to the presentation on the Subcommittee of the Catechism is Archbishop Leonard Blair, who is of the Archdiocese of Hartford. He's the chair of the Committee of Evangelization and Catechesis. And to his left is Bishop Frank Caggiano, the chair of the Subcommittee on the Catechism. Then also to Bishop Caggiano's left is Most Reverend Nelson Perez, Diocese of Cleveland, who is the chairman of the Subcommittee on Hispanic Affairs, to speak about the fifth Encuentro, if you have any questions. And finally, Bishop Frank DeWayne gave a great presentation this afternoon. He's a bishop of the Diocese of Venice in Florida and chairman on the Committee on Domestic Justice and Human Development, spoke to budget, healthcare, and tax reform issues. So, the usual format.
Yes, so usual format. If anybody has any questions.
His presentation was great, too.
Oh.
I said we were all great.
Stella.
I'm on the committee with you.
Riveting.
Heard this presentation 10 times. I'm on the committee.
Riveting. Okay, great. All right. Any questions that we have for our press panel? Yes.
Mark Patterson from Catholic News Service. This question is for Bishop Caggiano. Regarding some of the translation issues that you and Archbishop Blair had mentioned in the morning, what is going to be needed, because there's only so many sets of eyes you have handy at this point to read all these words, see all of these images, to see whatever potential links that could be in an online world. What kind do you have to ramp up the number of bishops that are available to do reading on the behalf of the subcommittee? Will you need more staff in order to shorten the wait times for something to come through or for material to get corrected so that it can be authenticated, so it could be verified, et cetera?
Excellent questions, and they are yet to be answered, because part of this reimagining process is going to dive into those details. I think part of what needs to happen is we need to gain a consensus about what oversight will mean for catechetical texts. Certainly the review process that we have now could not be extended to the digital world, and has not been extended to catechetical texts that, for example, are in languages other than English, because of the very reason that you have mentioned, that we don't have the personnel quite yet in place to be able to even address that. So this is going to be a process that will take a while. I look forward to working with the publishers also as collaborators to try to work together to come up with a plan where the bishops can agree on what oversight will look like in this new world, and be of assistance to the publishers and ask their continued cooperation. But I would imagine it's going to involve a lot more people than what we have now. Archbishop, did you want to add anything?
Great.
No,
yes.
I think that's...
Okay, Michael.
Michael Laughlin from America Magazine. My question is for Bishop DeWayne. As Cardinal Denard noted, your committee's been really busy with a lot of statements coming out the past year or so. And I'm wondering if you can comment on what it's been like for the conference and for your committee transitioning from the Obama administration to the Trump administration, some of the challenges and how the work for domestic justice has changed.
I think, Michael, in response, it's focused somewhat on the issues that have developed. Okay, healthcare certainly has been one, and that we saw. You know, I didn't talk about gun violence today, but we could have spoken about that because the conference has put a number of pieces out on that. That's probably not unique to any administration, but certainly something that is key to the people of our country, and we see the tragedy again today unfolding. You know, the budget cycle is a normal kind of thing. The tax reform is not. It's the first time it comes up in 10 years, I believe. So I think it's difficult to say one versus the other. I think it is due to issues by the number of statements we've had come out, the things that have, if you want to say, perked up on the political agenda that weren't due to any one administration per se. You know, tax reform, it happens almost in a cyclical way, and it arrived at that point, and we had administration who was taking a look at it, and they went at it. The health care, that debate's gone on for a long time. So I don't think there has been, you know, it's, okay, what are the issues of the day? And the conference takes a look at that, certainly doesn't try to create them, but has its set of principles that it then would apply to that incident, whatever it is that perks up.
And you had to get a Twitter account.
I'm sorry?
And you had to get a Twitter account so you can watch what's going on.
Great, yes, right here.
Oh, Maddalena Maltese from Agencyr, an Italian press agency. For Bishop DeWine, have you received any comments about your letters on tax reform by the Congress?
Any comments on the letters on tax reform from Congress? Comments, not really. There was one that I saw online that was probably saying, you know, couldn't you think outside the box on this one? You know, we have our certain moral principles. I'm not advocating, and the conference isn't, a tax policy per se, this one, this, a line item. But we are advocating for poor. The option for the poor has been around a long time, and the church has spoken up for it. And that's what we're looking at vis-a-vis the budget. Where are the poor in there, and how are they coming out of it? When you see defense climb and budgets are going to be cut, I get a little nervous that some of the safety net programs that help the poor are going to disappear. And I think that was almost said today in some of the media releases that came out, that that's what's going to happen. So I think it's principles that we have that guide us when we look at that budget. It's a moral document. The conference has said that over and over again. And we've identified a few particular areas vis-a-vis the budget, vis-a-vis tax reform, to look at and see the others being care for the poor, the family, progressivity of the tax reform, and then looking at, you know, how our program, the common good, okay, it needs support, that is taxes, to do programs for the common good. But then on the other side of that, when they start with cuts, how are the programs for the poor maintained or how do they disappear? To look at that strongly. And then the other would be incentives for the donations or volunteer.
Great. Father Reese first, and then you next, Kay.
Tom Reese from Religion News Service. A question on the review of catechetical material. Could you give us some specific examples of problems you run into? I mean, I kind of doubt that you're getting people saying there are four persons in the Blessed Trinity or that abortion is okay.
No, we'd be happy with three.
So, I mean, what are the things you're running into in terms of that are problematic in the material that's submitted to your for review? That you find objectionable and tell publishers to change?
One of the great challenges is finding the language that's appropriate to express the truths of the faith while also embracing a pedagogy that would address those truths in an appropriate way for children, or let's say young people. So I'll give you an example of a problem. A lot of it rests in Christology and ecclesiology. There are some texts that do not make the distinction between a human person and a divine person in Jesus, meaning that they refer to him as a human person, not as a divine person, which is extraordinarily problematic for us, since obviously at the heart of our faith, we believe the Lord to be the Redeemer and Savior of all creation. So my sense is that there is a difficulty with trying to find the language. So some of these, my hunch is that with the best of intentions, some of the writers perhaps do not have the anthropological background. So they're doing their best in their own thinking to try to convey the truth. But we have had texts over and over again where some of the Christological language is problematic. So we need that to be revised. So in this reimagining, our hope would be, rather than receive a text in its final form and then say, well, you have a problem here, if we walk with the writer, with an editor, if we walk in the process, it would be much easier to identify issues from the very beginning. And I think it would make for a much more collaborative relationship. And some of the texts that we've had some issues with would not arrive to that point where we'd have to send them back and say, no, this needs a rewrite of rewrite. But Christology, ecclesiology, some of the anthropological issues still, believe it or not, come up with some really interesting formulations. Archbishop, do you?
Yes, I might add that one of the things we encountered at a particular moment that I think we have now largely addressed is what we call tentative language. And by that I mean that obviously it's correct to say Catholics believe that Jesus rose from the dead. That's a true statement. But sometimes if a text had taken a kind of distance from the faith to make it sound as though, well, that's what we believe, but you know, it's not an affirmation of firm faith that this is the case. That was something that we worked out with the publishers, and I don't think the subcommittee finds that so much to be a difficulty anymore. But tentative language, you know, we're trying to, the young people with these texts, we are trying to propose to them a deeper understanding of a faith and not simply, you know, that this is just something that take it or leave it kind of thing. So I guess that would be another example.
Okay, great.
Michael Drake with the American TFP. Bishop DeWayne, could you give us a sense on one of those issues you mentioned, the conscience protections? Where are we in those, and why did it take so long for the Trump administration to give even minimal relief for some of the cases like Little Sisters of the Poor?
I don't really have an answer for your last part. Some might say it didn't take that long. So I suppose it's a perspective there. My other point, conscience rights, I'm not certain we have all of that in as strongly as like the conference say would like to see that, conscience protections. We heard other discussions in the course of our meeting on that point also. So I believe it's an issue that's still before us. In looking at the healthcare issue, where are the conscience rights for nurses, for doctors, for medical personnel? I don't know that that's clearly there. There's some now, a little bit more language coming out vis-a-vis the government, but that continues to be a concern. And as healthcare has developed, you know, we haven't had all the reforms yet. We will continue to look at those issues that we put forward, so to speak, as touch points for us. And hopefully that one will get added attention and greater clarity.
Okay, great. Dennis, did you have a question?
I might open up a can of worms here, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Bishop DeWayne, you brought up a number of issues with all the actions you've been sending out this year. And I know I write bulk of the stories about them. So, but I'm wondering how far down does that percolate to Cleveland, to Bridgeport, to your diocese, to Vermont? How does this all percolate? Because if it's coming from Washington, but the bishop or the Congress may not be hearing from individual bishops or people in the diocese. So I'm wondering how that might be. You might be organizing in those areas to make sure that the pressure is to follow the common good, that the pressure is coming more than just Washington, so.
I might address that coming out of the Communications Committee, and the comment that I made yesterday about the Communications Committee and the Public Relations arm of the conference trying to be more quick in its response. So there are statements that come out of the executive administrative level from the Office of the President that can be turned over within 24 hours that don't necessarily require a vetting amongst the bishops, and that's usually in response to something that's timely and necessary. There are also statements that can come out of each of us as committee chairman can issue our statements on behalf of the committee. However, we don't do it without first going through the administrator and through the president as a matter of courtesy, and they would they would vet it and kind of, and approve it. For the most part, they approve our letters and they go out. Then there's also those letters which are more of our of a larger policy that are a group effort, in which they try and get the six or the seven or eight chairs of the committees to all sign off. That takes a little bit more time. But there's been two letters to that effect. There was one on the economy, James, there was two that I've seen that had my signature on it. Do you recall what they were? James Rogers is our public relations communications person.
Each on the budget.
They were both on the budget. So, and I don't know if Frank, Bishop Duane, you want to speak further, or anyone else want to speak to this matter too?
I believe that those releases are done in a manner with someone looking at it, or even I'm from a diocese of Venice in Florida. My press person can take a look at it. There is theology there, but they're not steeped in it. There are practical points, and I do think it trickles down rather quickly, if I've understood your question correctly, to the respective dioceses. The bishops take a look at it. Their press people or communications, however they may term it out in the local diocese, then get it, and I think it's usually written so that it's understandable, and if I read something and I don't know what it is, anybody today just grabs this and they figure out immediately what's that bill about or what's that act about. So I do think it trickles down very quickly and has an impact.
Yes.
J.D. Flynn from Catholic News Agency. Bishop Duane, my question is for you. The tax issues that you talked about today, of course, are rooted in Catholic principles, but you're talking to Catholics who are so hyper-partisan that it seems like it's difficult to get the message past the partisanship. How do you effectively encourage Catholics to think beyond sort of the party lines that they're accustomed to hearing or identifying with?
I think those same individuals also have they're steeped deeper than I am. What's it cost to send their child to school? They know better than I do. I can ask it and get a number. They feel it every day. So I think each one of them, there is on the, among those issues a touch point in the taxes. Someone did an interview and I brought up the adoption tax credit. Well, this person had adopted children and they were very surprised that why would the church be concerned about this? And have that discussion, that idea that that child has a right to a family, a mother and father. We've supported a lot of documents the Vatican has at the United Nations with that exact point. But I don't think it's all partisan. Yes, we see that divide in our society today. But I talk to a lot of people who it's an issue they have a concern for and they want something to happen about it. And they care about, you know, whether it's migrants. We had a healthy discussion in the conference today about DACA. Most of you heard it. I think our society has spoken on that regardless of what party you're in. There is support. These young individuals need to be helped. And so it's there.
If I may.
Archbishop Blair, would you like to respond further?
If I may, I do think, and you, I believe you said this, that the we bishops speak out of a very principled kind of view. Our starting principles, you made that clear in what you said today, that and some of the others did as well, that there are basic principles that I think most people can agree on. I think it's the application of them. I mean, to be the most basic, you know, everybody wants a just society. What is a just tax law? What are some of the principles of justice? Same thing when we had the healthcare debate all the way back in the Obama administration. There were starting principles that the bishops used. And I think those are a matter of unity and some agreement. How you apply them, though, and how they bear analysis in a given bill, that's where you get the division.
Okay, we have time for one more question. Father Rees.
Thank you. One of the major public policy issues of the bishops during the past couple of years has been the contraceptive mandate. And Notre Dame University followed the bishops' lead on this and decided not to have contraception in their insurance policy. And now, I'm not quite sure what's going on, but sounds like the insurance company has decided to give it anyway. What's your feeling about what's happening with the insurance plan at Notre Dame? Is this an acceptable solution? What do the bishops think about this?
This isn't an answer, Father, directly to your question. It was really followed much more by religious liberty. Another committee at the conference that was established when all of that came about. You say yourself, you don't know exactly what they are, where it is, and what's the status. Neither do I, to be honest. But there appears to be some kind of contradiction maybe that needs to be clarified a little bit.
I could speak to the case in Vermont, Father. We do not, in terms of our health care providing of contraceptive care, we don't have any choice in that matter. It's not necessarily just the fact that it was enacted in law, but it's also, by the way, it's regulated. So, for example, while they might allow for a religious exemption under the law in Vermont, the reality is that the state agency that regulates the licensing of companies that can sell policies for health insurance will not license you unless you cover health care. Contraception. So the law might say one thing, but then when you get down into the weeds of what the regulator themselves are doing, it gets very difficult. So that may be the situation in Notre Dame. It's hard for us to know, in particular, what's going on there.
As a member of the Religious Liberty Committee, that's a very good question you've asked, and I would direct it to Archbishop Laurie, because I think he would be in a very good position to be able to give you some answer to that.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. I want to thank all the press that has come to cover the General Assembly, and thank you also, Your Excellencies. Thank you.